This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Bill Rock, thank you very much. Yes, indeed. Here we go on a Friday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and we have a guest with us as well. Good morning, Mr.
Good
Mayor.
Morning. First, I think I can officially declare that spring is here.
Well,
I mean, you're not going to have any more snow or really cold weather.
You're going to guarantee it.
Listen, you take a look at the weather, the devastation. What a tragedy.
You saw the result of it yesterday with the storms that blew through here, the anxiety level that was created.
Well, you look at the wreckage. There was a picture in one of the papers of a woman holding a little baby, and I thought to myself, I said, I hope the mother or the grandmother is saying to her, at least we're alive.
Right.
But the devastation is terrible. You can rebuild. You just can't bring back the lives.
Yeah, no,
nature is tough, and you can, keep raising your building standards, and you can do the right thing, and you can educate as to what you do in the case of this natural disaster or that one. But in the end, you got to depend on God.
Absolutely, and I know that you spend a lot of time doing that, planning for these things, but you can only plan so far, and then you just...
Yeah, and, the next disaster is never the one you plan for or in the place that you plan for. So a lot of the planning is really just expanding your mind, learning how you put together a plan on the fly when something happens. But it's never exactly the way you had anticipated. All the more reason why you want to keep planning for different things, because it shows people, it teaches them how to come together, how to get the information, how to put together, find out what the facts are and have people get input and come up with a plan and then execute. But you don't know what exactly the next plan is going to be.
And that is what FEMA is all about. And that's why when you see a Katrina, when you see a Hurricane Andrew, when you see a Tuscaloosa, Alabama situation, you really... There can't really be a plan. I mean,
back and you can take a look at Katrina, were the dikes built correctly, were they maintained, and that sort of thing. The devastation you saw from this storm, probably not a lot. You can build houses only to a certain standard. If you try to build houses that could withstand a direct hit from a tornado, the house would be so expensive nobody could afford it. Which gets us to Seth Diamond.
Absolutely.
Because Seth, you have to have a roof over your head.
Seth Diamond is here. He is the Commissioner of Homeless Services. Seth, hello. Good morning.
Hi, good morning,
good
John.
To see you again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, new report on the homeless in the city.
Yeah, we released our annual survey of people living on the street, and we're very pleased to report a 15% decline in the numbers on the street from last year and a very significant 40% decline compared with 2005. We think it represents really good progress in trying to move people off the street into homes, into better situations.
All right, as you and I have talked, Mr. Mayor, the program that moves people into housing is going to be cut back significantly, isn't it?
Yes, but you want to tell them what's happened in the homeless shelter?
Yeah, you're talking about the Advantage program.
Correct.
Which last time I was here we talked about, and there we did have a very deep elimination of the program, actually, by the state. We have seen a reduction in people coming in since we've eliminated the program, so we haven't had the significant increase in the number
there's
of
no
shelters.
There's no connection between the elimination of the program and fewer people,
there's
is there?
You never know what... Look, it's a lot of people, and you never know what motivates people. One theory is that some people have been coming into the homeless system, the shelter system, order to qualify for a program that helps you move out of the homeless system. Now, keep in mind, most people in the homeless system, they're homeless. They need the help. This is nothing.
There's no scam going on.
At the margin, are there some people that do that? Yeah, sure. The economic incentives probably get some people to do it. But it's fascinating. If you see somebody on the street lying on a grate or just there panhandling, call 311. Seth's professionals will come and take care of it. I do. When I drive down the street, if I see somebody, I either call 311 or I ask one of the security guys with me while I go inside and give the speech, please do me a favor, call for them. And then Seth's professionals can show up and try to help that person. And most of the people on the streets Seth has interfaced with, they are the same people generally that go in and out of the system. They don't want to stay in shelter systems. They may have psychiatric problems or substance abuse problems or, you know, terrible family problems, histories that just leave you and you tear your hair out. You wonder how anybody can even survive. But those people, it's very hard to help. And you can't force them into shelter unless it's very, very cold. And the law then says, well, if their lives are in jeopardy, Seth can do that. But what Seth's done through all of this stuff, and people, you know, question the homeless system and all that thing. We've set some, as you know, our optimistic goals, and we're going to stick to those goals to try to get the homeless population way down. With the economy, when it turned south, it really went in the other direction. But if you remember, when we came into office, people were sleeping on benches. Kids were getting bussed around in the middle of the night. All that stuff is gone. Some people say, well, one of the reasons the homeless system is getting more people, homeless shelter system, is it's better. I don't know whether that's a reason or not, but we're certainly not going to make it worse. We're going to continue to make it better. We're going to try to reach out for everybody. We're going to try to move them into permanent housing. And the numbers will be what they'll be. But I think Seth and his and Homeless Services has just done a spectacular job here. The numbers recently are very encouraging and going down. Still high. It's much too high than what you'd want, but going down. And this, the percentage of the public that lives on the streets in New York City, it's now one out of every 3,087. And if you compare that, that is one of the lowest of any major city in the country. There are some cities that are down in the 1 in 200s.
Seth, do you have any context on the folks that are on the streets? Are they New Yorkers, or have they come from other places? Is there any statistic on that? Or
they're generally New Yorkers, mm-hmm. but they're a different population that comes to our shelters. They're generally people who have significant mental health issues, substance abuse issues. People who come to the shelter system are people who generally were living somewhere else and have had problems there, can no longer live there for one reason or another. People on the streets have significant issues that we need to address. And the reason we've had such success is that we use the resources of the entire city. The mayor has charged not just our department, but the Parks Department, the Police Department, the Sanitation Department, all to work together with a range of not-for-profit agencies to really have this intensive, unrelenting effort to move people off the street. And that's why we've had such great success.
Talk to me about the nonprofits that help you, because they are absolutely critical.
Absolutely. They're key partners in this, and we have nonprofits dedicated, one per each borough. They have targets based on the population, and we use this data. One of the things, you know, that the mayor has been very clear on since he came into office is that you have to use data to manage. We use this data to inform where we should go, where we should put our resources, how we should change our strategies, and that's why this has been successful. We don't rest on our success, and we don't stay with something that's not working. We constantly adapt to changing circumstances, ask the not-for-profits to do different things, to look at the problems differently, depending on what the situation on the ground is.
You know, John, some of the advocates, they never liked the Advantage program because they say you should give everybody permanent shelter, permanent housing, and the government should pay for everything. And there's some advocates that just believe that it's government's responsibility to provide good housing, for everyone. And I think most people just say, look, we can't afford that. We want to give people a hand up rather than a hand out and help them. But, you know, it's fascinating. You and I have talked about this before, but the ways that Seth counts the homeless, there's something called the HOPE program, H-O-P-E, and it's been identified by the Department of Housing and Urban Development as one of the best survey methods ever. It started out with a few hundred volunteers. This year, we had 3,000 volunteers working across all five boroughs. We send out decoys, and then we count the number of homeless, and we assume that we missed the same percentage of the real homeless that we missed of the decoys. So there's some real science behind it. And if you just listen to some of the numbers, this year compared to last, 31% reduction in street homeless in Manhattan, 34% in the Bronx, 43% in Brooklyn, 9% in Queens, and 27% in Staten Island, 32% overall. The only area that went up was on the subways, an 18% increase, but it is so small that could be how many people it would be just...
It was a couple hundred more. And people are transitory, of course. Some are on the street, some are on the subway.
Right. They move back and forth.
And you ask, you know, people where they come from. New York is, contrary to people think, New York's not a place you want to come if you want to put your feet up. People in New York, you have to work. And the programs that we have, it's not easy. You just don't walk in and say, hey, give me something for nothing. I mean, there's some scamming and there's some people who aren't working as hard as they could. But generally speaking, our agencies work as hard as we can to make sure that if you can take care of yourself, you do, and we'll give you that hand up. If you're going to sleep on the streets, we'll make sure you don't, unless you refuse to take help. If your child really needs services, we will get those services. But in the end, our responsibility is to try to help everybody become a productive, self-sufficient citizen. That's what the taxpayers want, and that's what America's all about.
What about the advocacy groups that say your numbers are tricked out? They don't like your numbers.
I don't think that there's a number in the world that they would like that isn't, you know, that's the trouble with advocacy groups. If you
the smaller fix, the number doesn't work.
That's right. If you fix the if you make real progress in eliminating the problem, then there's less money. And they don't want that. And incidentally, some of the people that work providing the service don't want that either. So you just got to be careful. The issue is, are the numbers correct? You do the best you can. They're never going to be 100%. This is social science. This isn't physical science where you can count exactly. But I think your answer to your question, if Seth's numbers went up and down, you'd say, well, yeah, there's a lot of noise in them. His numbers last year was up, or the year before, a touch. But it's been coming down virtually every year.
Well, keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
I know the people of the street hope that, too.
Yeah, we all hope that. Thanks very much.
Seth Diamond, the Commissioner, Department of Homeland Services. Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let me take care of some business.
4 minutes
after 8 o'clock. Again, if you've got a question, we got a couple of lines open. You have to get through Mike Figliola, 800-321-0710.
Did you watch the wedding this morning?
I did watch the wedding this morning. We talked quite a bit about it. Did you catch any of it on your
travels? As I walked by the television, you know, they seem like nice people. I think I've met the Prince once. I've never met her. But it's an event.
I mean, it's like a movie.
You know, in some sense, I feel sorry for them. Although, listen, that's their job and that sort of thing. But, you know, people should not let them alone and let them try to have as much a normal life as you can, given what their job is
and what their position is. It certainly seems by the pictures that the people of London, certainly a large percentage of them, certainly love the games, love the show.
Yeah, I happen to think it's great for England. A lot of people go, tourism is there. And, you know, listen, you can criticize anything, but it's an institution. And pomp and circumstance and history and all of the symbolism matters. It gives people pride. You know, you think we have our own kind of things. I mean, you know, you stand there and you look at people pledging allegiance to the flag and looking up at the flag, and there's a great Norman Rockwell picture of somebody doing that, and you look in the guy's eyes or the woman's eyes, I forget, and, you know, it's our symbolism. We have it, too.
We certainly do, but we dress a little bit differently than they do for these over there.
Well,
it's really extraordinary. I enjoyed watching it myself. It was kind of interesting. And certainly.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to do it every day.
No, you certainly don't. Speaking of uniforms and the like, what's the latest on the ticket scandal? And how broad is this? I read words in the newspaper of, you know, just massive fraud.
John, look, there's an investigation going on. I make a point of never getting involved in the investigation. I said the evidence to me is, I've read it in the paper. Is it true or not? I don't know. There's an awful lot of press been written about it, and we'll leave it up to an investigation. There should not be ticket fixing. It really is an outrage. There's nobody that wants to stop it more than our police commissioner. He's as gung-ho to stop it as anybody. He is a scrupulously honest guy and enormously proud of the best police department in the world. And if a handful of people did something wrong, let the investigation find it out, and then he'll take appropriate measures.
Speaking of appropriately annoyed about the P. Diddy escort story?
You know, yes, but when you really look at it, I don't know whether it's true, but what you read in the paper is that a sergeant had a big crowd, wanted to get the guy out of there, said to somebody, get him out of here, give him a ride, give him an escort for one block to get out of the crowd. Maybe that was the appropriate thing. I'll leave that up to the police commissioner when he does an investigation.
Or the sergeant on the scene, whoever was
making the decision. Yeah, I mean, they had to, it's easy to second guess all the time. What is apparently clear from what I've read and what I've heard and what the commissioner told me is he did not get an escort over to New Jersey or any long distance whatsoever. And whether it was appropriate for one or two blocks or whatever, I'll leave that up to them. It does not seem like the great brouhaha,
for good pictures, and that's what a lot of this is about. Let me ask you about...
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, the police department's job is to get people
safely,
and if a crowd is... gathering for somebody, whether it's a rock star or an athlete or you. When you got in the street, John, people always gather big crowds
big
screaming,
crowd.
Gambling,
huge,
I love you, gambling, I watch, I listen, yeah. You know. You're
gigantic.
On in the afternoon, aren't you? I mean, that's,
No idea. Alternate side of the street parking is a major deal for obviously a significant portion of the people.
Yes.
What is this that's going on where you can get a buy possibly under a new law that the city council wants to do?
The reason for alternate side of the street parking is so that you can clean the streets. The streets in New York, the sanitation department does a very good job. They are very clean. People that come, and we forget history. People say, they're not great. Friends that come from out of town say, what happened to everything? I was here 10 years ago. Or 20 years ago, or whatever, and it was a sewer, and today it is, you can get out, on one street in Brooklyn, I always go down, and when I first came into office, it was trash from one end to another. And now when I drive into a major street in Brooklyn, I always look and count how many blocks you can go before you see one piece of paper in the street. Things are dramatically better. But anyways, the idea of alternate side of street parking is so that they can clean the streets. City Council says, well, if the streets are already clean, you don't have to move, and people don't like to move their have the responsibility to move their cars. And we're trying to mitigate the pain if we don't need it. So we've reduced the number of hours in about a dozen neighborhoods in Brooklyn and the Bronx already and see whether that works. And if it turns out that in some neighborhoods the streets are pretty clean because the neighbors don't throw stuff, or people walking by, then there's no reason to make people be inconvenienced. But in the end, if the streets are dirty, we have to clean them, and that's the only way you should do that is with alternate side of the street parking.
All right, I'm going to wait and see how this one works. It seems complicated. I know the goal.
Well, I mean, that's
the
trouble. If you make the more exceptions you have and you try to accommodate people, but nobody can remember. It's like having so many different websites and so many different phone numbers. That's why we concentrated it in 311, 911, and nyc.gov, and yet everybody keeps, it's a constant battle because they always want to have, well, I know that, but I'm going to have one more number, you know, and you got to force them back and, well, show me why. Because long term, once you start down that path of trying to tailor every single little thing, nobody can follow it.
Yep, life gets complicated. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. 8:30 is our time. 8:31 specifically. On our Friday John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 24 before 9 o'clock. And it looks like I've got a couple of lines open. If you've got some questions, 800-321-0710. Your budget comes out next week?
Budget comes out next week. That is the executive budget. Then we work with the city council, which we do all the time anyways. And,
we will have an
on-time budget like we've done every year, working with the city council led by Chris Quinn. And, it will be we're going to do everything we can to avoid layoffs, to make them as small as possible, minimize any impact on people and protect the vital services that are going to get us through these tough times. But our goal has got to be to make sure we have a strong city and that we protect the vital services and the social safety net, even in the face of sometimes, the difficult choices, so that we can have a vibrant economy and go forward. We've got to have some money in case the worst happens. You never know what can befall you.
Have there been any gimmies from the state that you didn't know a week ago or so?
No. The governor has got to represent the state. He's got his problems. I've got to represent the city. I've got mine. President's got to represent the country. He's got his problems. I think it's fair to say at all levels of government, the state, the governor was elected because he campaigned on that. He said, we've been living beyond our means. President, the same thing. You see in Congress, there's a big focus on deficit reduction all of a sudden. Simpson Bowles, and then there's this Gang of Six, and Paul Ryan, and the president. I mean, might not agree with any particular proposal, but clearly there's a focus on reducing deficits at the state level. The governor doesn't have any choice. He has to reduce them. When he cuts back aid to the city, we're going to yell and scream, but he's, in all fairness to him, he's got to cut back. I've said, we're part of the state as well, and we'll help We just want it to be proportional, and it's never, nobody's ever satisfied with their proportion. Nobody ever thinks it's fair, in all fairness. But we've been cut back, you know, $850 million in federal stimulus funds that we don't have this year. That's an awful lot. It's almost $1 billion. I mean, think about that. We just treat these like numbers.
They do become meaningless the way they're thrown
around.
Well,
that's the trouble. $800 million less in education money from the state. So between the federal and state, you know, that's close to $1.7 billion. We've already put $2.1 billion more into education from city taxpayer dollars. But, you know, there still is not enough money, and we're going to have to find a ways through this. And we're going to do everything we can to just make sure that the basic services which people across the city depend on and which we're committed to give will be provided, and without new taxes. You just can't raise taxes at the moment. It's not a question of, you know, I think I always get a big smile on my face. I joke that three things I want more of. I want more gray hair, more taxes, and more birthdays. Everybody says more taxes. Well, you know, if you make more money, you're going to pay more taxes. But, you know, people in New York City get a lot for their taxes. Now, not everybody feels that way, and some people move, and some people aren't happy. But this city works, and it works because we have a great municipal workforce, and they want to get paid. And sometimes I think we've given away some things we can no longer afford, and pensions and that sort of thing, and some of that's been done by the state, and that's why pension relief is so important, and we'll do everything we can to help the governor, because it has to be done at a state level. But our pension costs have gone from something like $1.5 billion in 2002 to next year will be $8.5 billion.
That's a lot of
money. $7 billion more. We've cut over $7 billion out of our deficit, but then it's gone away the other side. And that's why we're every year, people say it's a broken record. Every year, yes. The good news is we put a lot of money aside when things were really good. And I said, this just can't last. We've been using up that surplus. And by next year, and we have to have some for next year. And after that, we'll see.
Has the governor indicated that he's going to move to one LIFO in the course of the next year? And two, New York City being able to negotiate pensions anytime in the future?
Well, yeah, I think you got to ask the governor. I don't want to speak for him, but he has been very supportive. He said publicly that he thinks that LIFO is not an intelligent ways if you have to have layoffs. I think he'd prefer that we didn't have to downsize. But the reality is that the budget, we cannot afford what we have, and unless we can find some alternative funding source, and so far have not been able to do that. The LIFO thing is terribly important to education, and it has to be. And we will work with the governor. I can lobby and yell and scream and whatever, but you have to do it in all fairness with the governor. Pension reform has to be done with the governor. LIFO has to be done with the governor. Can't do anything with the ethics reform the governor is committed to do, but I can certainly weigh in and give him as much moral support and public support as I can. I couldn't agree more with the governor. He's 100% right. And keep in mind, I've always said that New York City really, Quinn deserves a lot of the credit for this. The ethics of our city government are actually very good, and I think a role model for governments every place. There is a lot less pay-to-play kind of influence. There's a lot less of legislators voting on bills that they've never read, which is still the tradition, you know, in at other levels of government. But in all fairness to Chris, I think every city councilman gets, every bill has to be delivered 5 days in advance. We don't have something called a message of necessity, which they do in Albany so they can avoid the law that says everybody's got to read it. We hold public hearings. The city council has plenty of hearings. Then the mayor has hearings. Going to have a hearing later today. We did one the other day because the law said you had to have it within X days, but it was also Passover, so we wanted to do one today as well. And unless somebody makes a convincing argument, these bills I'll sign, they're not really very controversial.
All right, City Time, the scandal there, we know about another one.
City Time is, last I checked, which was about 2 weeks ago, we're on schedule for a schedule to have like the, I think it's 175,000, whatever the number is, people on it. And those agencies that use it say it saves a lot of money.
Okay. Willard Lantham was arrested and allegedly stole $3.5
million. Allegedly stole $3.5 million. Keep in mind the Department of Education staff reported his criminal activity to the Special Commissioner of Investigations back in 06. It's a long time ago.
It is a long time ago.
In
why?
08, in 08, we severed ties with him. They wanted to collect some evidence, and then the process works. It's unconscionable. You know, this is the money that is the public's money that should be going to educate our kids. We put in new safeguards since then. You know,
I was going to say, do you have your deputy mayors told you that there's an issue that needs to be adjusted?
You know, that's always whenever there's fraud, you can look back and say you should have looked there. And keep in mind, the city has a budget of $665 billion a year with lots and lots of contracts and lots of opportunity. But we really are, in this case, we should say thank you to the U.S. Attorney for seeking justice. And we're going to do all we can, including working with Verizon and IBM to try to recover the stolen funds. And you get back some, not all, but you get back some of the stolen money. But this, you know, there's just no excuse.
So you're comfortable that the supervisory component is where it needs to be?
I don't know whether, you know, see what the investigation shows. Keep in mind, it was a long time ago, and I keep working to tighten. Are you ever going to have 350,000 employees, $65 billion budget, thousands of contracts without somebody ripping off? Probably not, sadly enough.
Three people killed in the Bronx fire.
Illegal conversions.
Illegal conversions, calls that allegedly go on, you know, reporting of this that goes
I don't know everyone, but generally we do respond. The problem is you literally cannot get a warrant to go in. If somebody lets you in to look at your house to see whether there's an illegal conversion, that's great. And about half do, actually.
And I gather this one, entrance was a problem.
And about a half of those that you get in, you find violations. In this case, they couldn't get in, and then the law is clear. We talk about the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. This is the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment of the Constitution is against illegal search and seizure. And you just can't walk in, and the courts are very clear. You know, if you saw five doorbells and five mailboxes, and it's a single-family house, you probably could get a warrant, except that the landlords who are scamming the system and the ones that really are culpable, they've gotten smart. They don't do that anymore. It's one doorbell and one mailbox. So, you know, it's very hard to get in, and we try again.
How big
and again.
An issue is this? Any estimates?
There are estimates of a few hundred thousand people or more. Some estimates go up to 1 million. I think it's probably more like, you know, 250,000, something like that, of people.
Which would mean tens of thousands of homes.
When problems get this big, it's really hard to see what a solution is because we keep building housing, but people keep coming to the city. The good news is they want to live here. The bad news is we're never going to have enough housing. The good news is, on the other side, we are building and rehabbing 165,000 units of affordable housing. That's just this one program, and Sean Donovan started it, and then we've had a couple of other commissioners and continue. Matt Wambua is doing it now, and Rafael Sestero between them. That's as many to house as many people as live in Atlanta, Georgia. That's just this one program's increase. But it still is not enough. And in tough economic times, it's very hard to find the money to keep doing it. But that's what we got to do. In this case, they did try to get in. They couldn't get a court order. At one point, I think the fire department was in, and they were vacated the floor. But then they couldn't get back in to see whether or not their vacate order was complied with. And we'll do the best we can, but in the end, it's the landlords who are doing this.
I was just going to ask you this. Does the city go after the landlord in a situation like this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I assume there'd be criminal charges. Right. I assume. I don't know. But, you know, some three, four people died.
Right.
And in a what was an illegal conversion, pretty sure that's what, you know, you have to give everybody a day in court. But, yes, we take this phenomenon. These are people's lives. And landlords have got to understand, if they break the law, they're putting people's lives at danger, and society is not going to just sit back.
The cab of the future. I interviewed the president of Carsan earlier this week, and he has made the offer that if his taxi is chosen, he will build a plant to build it in Brooklyn. I hear the Nissan car is closer in the race. When is this decision to be made?
Close, and there's a number of different factors. There are three cars.
You could call it the Bloomy, you know.
Is that right? The Turkish one, the one you're talking about, is the only one that is totally handicap accessible. It has a ramp for a wheelchair. That's one issue. You've got to look at how much experience companies have had in building cars. You want these things to last on the tough streets. Easy to say, I can build a car. What do you do if 2 years from now the wheels start falling off? Oh, why did you pick that company? So, you know, and how do you know how good the cars are going to be? Well, you have to look at what the record is. Nissan and Ford have a record of building lots and lots of cars and understand. So that's some of their advantages. Some people like the style of one. Some people like the style of others. Not an easy decision. There's a possibility.
It's a big decision, too.
And there's a possibility that you could go with one car that's not handicap accessible, and a court order would say you can't buy those because they have to be. We think that we have a solution to that, where not all of them are, but enough are. The good news is David Yaskes, who runs the Taxi and Limousine Commission, former city councilman, very competent guy. And there will be, you can rest assured, this is data-driven. It's a nice thing if it were built in Brooklyn. The other two companies build cars. These cars will be built outside of America. And we want to encourage jobs coming here, but not at the expense of getting a car that isn't the right car. So the first criteria is the right car. If it were tied, yeah, sure, those things matter, but safety and reliability and convenience for the public are the deciding things, and where it's built is a...
Where do you stand on the cabbies want more money for gasoline prices?
Well, I'm sympathetic, and the gas prices are higher. I was driving up the west side, got off at 12th Avenue, first gas station under the High Line, $4.60. Now, in all fairness, three blocks north on the other side of the street, $4.06. But it's $4 gasoline all over the place. It gets more. Their expenses go up. I think, you know, you want to make sure that they're providing the service that we expect them to provide. And one of the things that Yaskes working very hard on is getting a solution to the fact that outside of the central part of Manhattan, you can't generally find a yellow cab. And stories are legioned of you get in a cab in Midtown and say, I want to go to someplace other than the central part of Manhattan or into one of the other four great boroughs, and the cab driver won't. And, you know, all of this is tied together, and we're going to look very carefully at everything.
All right, Mr. Mayor, 800-321-0710 is the telephone number. Questions from you. We've got some tweets. I see some tweets in front of the mayor. We'll get to those as well as we continue. Here on the John Gambling Show, and we're going to go to the telephones. Mr. Mayor, pick up your headphone, if you would. You ready to go? Line number two, Larry in Cranford. You got the mayor. Go.
Hi, you said something very funny before. You said, I think I met the Prince of England once. That was pretty good.
I've met Charles. I've met his mother. She came to New York, the Queen, shook her hand. Very nice, very polite. We did cut a ribbon at a couple places I remember.
That's what queens do.
That's what queens do. And this is her grandson getting married, and I think I've met him once. His brother I know I've met because he's done some athletic events here. He played in a
rugby match.
It was a polo tournament on Governor's Island.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, all right, Larry, what's the question?
Anyway, thanks very much. The question is, you know, do we think the construction on the FDR Drive around the Triborough Bridge, 125th Street, is that ever going to come to an end?
Well, ever is a long time, so I can honestly say yes, if you give me a time frame of ever. You know, Henry once said that it would be a great city if they ever finished it, referring to New York. Most of that construction has to do with the new Willis Avenue Bridge, which is getting very close. I mean, it's used It opens because they got out the other bridge through it, I guess.
Unless yes,
they
took it north. Yeah, gone,
they
yeah.
take it south?
No, they took it south to the scrap place.
Okay, yeah. So the bridge really turns, and that's good. That was what it's supposed
Especially
to do.
Especially if you have a boat.
Right. you know, unfortunately, there's the old dig we must or build we must if you're going to have a city. But, yes, I think there is some hope for that. You know, the big roads constantly need repair. The good news is we've spent an enormous amount of money to make sure our bridges are safe. The last big project that where you did have some real issues is the Brooklyn Bridge, and that as you go by, you'll see plenty of work there with a lot of federal money. I remember Joe Biden came and we cut a ribbon or said thank you to the federal government for all of that.
Outer roadway of the Williamsburg Bridge inbound is still needing repair.
Right.
I just throw that out for what happens.
What about a tweet?
You got a tweet?
Well, yeah, we have lots
tweet
of tweets
me.
Here.
Yeah,
sure.
Tweet me.
Somebody's asked, somebody named Mike, what his name is, can we send a detachment of FDNY down to Atlanta? They need our help. To Alabama.
Alabama, yeah.
And we are on FEMA's list, and we've deployed to the Gulf of Mexico after Hurricane Gustav and Haiti last year. If they call us, our combined FDNY, NYPD, OEM team can be airborne within a couple of hours. But the feds have to call us, and they know we're willing to do it.
Where we are, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You got another tweet there.
This one I'm sort of reticent to bring it up. It asks, "What's up with medical marijuana in NYC? Is it going to be okayed soon? Need to know by this weekend."
what are you going to do?
We do not allow medical marijuana in this state. They do in California.
They do it. They're thinking about it seriously in New Jersey as well. So I think it's a terrible idea. That's my personal opinion.
The argument is that the only way you're ever going to end the drug trade is to legalize drugs and take away the profit motive, and that the corruption funds enormous dislocation. So in Mexico, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of people have been killed in the wars of the government trying to clamp down on the drug dealers. There's no easy answer to any of these things. There are places where they've legalized drugs, and then whether it destroyed the society or didn't is up to debate again. One quick thing, somebody tweeted about whether we install CUI water fountains to curb plastic bottled water use. And actually, we did last year. Cass Holloway and the staff of the Department of Environment Protection installed water stations in dozens of public places in all five boroughs. And they counted something like 80,000, 90,000 people use it, and they're going to do the same thing again this year.
Yeah, you know, the water of New York City, it's folly that we don't drink it, or a lot of people don't drink it.
I do. I go in when restaurants say you want bottled water, tap
right
water,
out of the
thank
tap.
You.
Give it out of the tap.
Yep.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's it. And that's going to do it for us. We still have another hour's worth of the John Gambling Show, sir. Enjoy your weekend.
And you
weekend.
As well.
All right. We'll see you soon. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show.